It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later in the show, we'll look at the rise of locally sourced lunches at Wisconsin schools.
But first, according to our next guest, birth by cesarean section has reached epidemic proportions in the United States.
The 2011 numbers put the rate at about 33%. That's an increase of 50% over the last decade.
Joining us now to help sort out what's happening and why is Teresa Morris. She's a professor of sociology at Trinity College and the author of Cut It Out, The C-Section Epidemic in America. Teresa, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to join you, Veronica.
Well, you start your book by sharing the story of the first time you gave birth and how things went quite a bit differently than you'd planned. Could you tell us a little bit about your own story?
Sure. My son was a surprise breech baby, and that is that we expected he was in a head-down position, but when I went to the hospital in labor, it turned out he was actually head up and had his feet up by his ears. That's called a frank breech position. And so I was whisked away for a swift C-section, and that really bothered me in a lot of ways. I'd done a lot of preparation and had hoped to have a vaginal birth. I think most women, the data shows, hope to have a vaginal birth. And that really, changed the way I thought about birth, I think, because of that surprise. So when I became pregnant a few years later, I really wanted to have a vaginal birth, and I did the research because women, of course, after having a C-section could have a repeat C-section or could have what's called a vaginal birth after cesarean section, which is often referred to as a VBAC because of the acronym. And what I found was that it's difficult to find a supportive provider and to stay free of interventions in the hospital if one chooses to do that. And I actually did have a successful VBAC birth at a hospital in Connecticut, and I thought that was a really empowering experience. What I was really left with, however, was the feeling that it really is very difficult for women to find, again, supportive care. And I'm an organizational sociologist, so having a background in studying banks and corporations, I decided to change my lens to studying birth and how maybe organizations might have some responsibility in the high C-section rate.
Well, it's interesting because before I read your book and I knew a little bit about it, I assumed that the reason would be that women were electing themselves to have C-sections, and you call this the too posh to push sort of argument about why more C-sections are happening, but it turns out maybe that's not the case. Do you want to talk about that assumption and what you found?
Sure. I think that's a common explanation for the C-section rate, and there's actually evidence that shows that although most providers have very few women who ask for a primary C-section rate, or I should say an elective cesarean for no medical indication, even if they have few women who do that, they often believe that that's a high cause of the C-section rate, so it's kind of interesting. The empirical evidence suggests that less than 1% of women ask for a C-section with no medical indication, and this is often hard to tease out because most researchers use birth certificate data to understand why a woman had a C-section. And even if it might indicate that a woman had a C-section for no medical indication, it's really difficult on a birth certificate then to figure out if that was a woman's request or if a physician suggested that to her. But all the survey evidence suggests that women very seldom ask for a C-section without medical indication.
Well, it would be interesting, you know, if that were the reason, because I think to the general public, in most cases, you know, you think that a C-section, it can be done under extreme conditions, of course, to save a mother's life or a baby's life. But by and large, I think that we think of C-sections as being pretty routine and pretty safe. Is that true?
I think that's a very, very common, and the college students I teach in a course on reproduction have said that to me. Oh, we thought that C-sections were just really safe. And I don't want to suggest that women who have C-sections should think of them as inherently unsafe, because I think in modern medicine they're relatively safe. But I think when you look at a comparison of C-sections compared to vaginal birth, that we see that they're more dangerous for women and babies, and that is that both women and babies are more likely to be injured or to die in a cesarean section birth than in a vaginal birth. And I think that's the comparison we need to focus on.
Well, you're talking about how there are higher rates of injury, maybe death sometimes, and yet here we are at this high rate, 33% in the United States. Could you put that into context a little for us? How high is that really? Is 33% something to be alarmed at?
I think it's very alarming. The best benchmark we have is from the World Health Organization, which has for almost 30 years suggested that countries that have a C-section rate over 15% put women's lives and health at risk. And we know that that's the case. And with the U.S. C-section rate being twice that, we know that then women and I should say babies too are being unnecessarily harmed with that high rate. I should say also that the maternal mortality rate in the United States, so that would be the rate of women who give birth and die within 40 days, that's actually increasing, and that should be a really big concern, and I think it is a big concern in the public health world, and that rate has increased 75% in the last 20 years. So it is at epidemic levels. And one other point I would make that C-sections are sometimes necessary, as you mentioned, and can save lives, and the World Health Organization suggests that countries that have a C-section rate below 5% put women's lives and at risk. So it's that hitting that middle, point between 5 and 15 seems to be what's best for countries. And we're significantly higher than that.
Okay, so we found out that it's not women who are electing to have them because, you know, they just don't want to go through the ordeal of having a baby.
Right.
So what is causing the trend of C-sections?
Right. Well, I think that what has happened is that due to some congressional changes about how hospitals and providers would be compensated for providing care to patients, and that happened in the 1980s. I think since the 1980s, the healthcare industry has been put under increasing profit pressures, and that continues today, and that's why we see the growth of the size of practices. That's why we see increasing growth of hospital systems. That's something that hospitals really can't control. And so what they've turned to controlling are liability risks, and that is that any time a physician takes care of a patient, and and the hospital is also responsible for this, if there's a bad outcome, that could be due to medical negligence. And if it is medical negligence, then providers are held responsible for that, and hospitals are held responsible for that. And so malpractice insurance is routinely used then by both providers and hospitals to pay for any of those types of events that happen. But what's happened then because of these cost pressures, I think, is that hospitals and providers then have put in place practices in hospitals that deal with birth that aren't evidence-based to improve outcomes, but rather are used to protect hospitals and providers from liability.
Like what?
In the case of a bad outcome. Well, I think the best example is the protocol for the use of a continuous electronic fetal monitor, and that would be used continuously during labor to monitor a baby's heart rate. Now, there's no evidence that a woman wearing a continuous fetal monitor improves fetal outcomes compared to a woman who is just monitored. It's called intermittently, every 30 minutes during active labor, every 5 minutes when the woman is pushing. But what has been shown is that women are much more likely to have a C-section if they wear an electronic fetal monitor. So for every 6 women, low-risk women who have an electronic fetal monitor worn continuously, one of those women will have a C-section because of an issue with the monitor showing fetal distress. The monitor has a 99.8% false positive rate. You might ask why it's still used.
Right. That is the question.
Right. It's used because providers and hospitals have learned that if there is a bad baby outcome, that they will be asked to show evidence that the baby was being properly monitored and to show that baby was doing fine and a cesarean section was not necessary, or it was not necessary earlier if the baby was born by C-section. So they've learned through courts and through media that they have to have that, and they just won't abandon it, even though there's no evidence. And I talked to a physician today who told me that, you know, it would never be abandoned also because it allows nurses to watch more than one patient at a time, and hospitals just can't afford to hire enough nurses.
What about in other countries? What do they do, other developed nations that have lower rates than this 33 where we are? What do they do differently?
I have to say that I'm not an expert on other countries. Other countries tend to have lower rates than we do, but I have to say that that's not something I've explored, why they're lower than the United States.
What else do hospitals do that you think could, you know, that they currently is something that's a common practice that could reduce the C-section rate?
Things that they do that could reduce the C-section rate?
If they stop doing it, right.
They could stop doing it. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Well, beyond the electronic fetal monitor, many women have their labors artificially started or induced rather than going into spontaneous labor. Those women the current induction rate is 41% in the United States, and those women are twice as likely to have a C-section than women whose labors start naturally. And that's particularly the case for first-time moms whose uterus just really isn't ready to go into labor yet, and there are signs for that, those women have about a 50% chance of a C-section. Now, a lot of these inductions happen because women are what is considered overdue. They haven't delivered by their due date, which is considered 40 days gestation, 41 days, excuse me, weeks gestation. That would be a
that
quick
would be
pregnancy.
Nice, huh?
So women are often induced, so they won't go past 40 weeks because there is some evidence that delivering past 41 weeks increases a woman's chance of stillbirth, although the risk is so tiny you can't quantify it. So it doesn't happen very often. But providers are worried that if a woman delivers after 41 weeks, after 40 or 41 weeks, they may use different guidelines there, that they'll be held liable or they'll be held accountable for that. So they induce these women, and just inducing them increases their chance of C-section. And one other thing I'll just mention is the use of ultrasound in late pregnancy. Ultrasound, of course, uses sound waves to visualize the fetus. And when women have an ultrasound in the last month of pregnancy, that increases their risk of having a C-section by about 40%. And that's a lot because this visualization of the fetus allows a provider to worry that the fetus is big and won't fit well or will somehow have a problem. One typical problem would be shoulder dystocia. That's when a baby's head is born vaginally and the shoulders get stuck. It's more common with big babies over 9 pounds, 15 ounces, but it can happen in any birth. But if a provider suspects a baby is big based on ultrasound prediction, then that baby might be delivered prophylactically by C-section, or the provider may intervene more quickly thinking that the baby is going to be big and get stuck.
We're talking right now with Teresa Morris. She is the author of Cut It Out, The C-Section Epidemic in America. We'll be back with her in just a bit.
And we want to hear your stories and your questions. Why do you think C-sections are increasing dramatically in the United States? Is it a problem or just an instance of preventive medicine? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on our Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.
We're talking with Teresa Morris about the dramatic increase in births by C-sections in the U.S. The 2011 rate puts us at 33%. It's one of the highest in the developed world.
We want to hear from you. Why do you think C-sections are on the rise? Are you worried about it? What was your experience? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email, talk@WPR.org.
Let's go to the phones now. We have Jessica joining us from Ladysmith. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. I currently work in a hospital, and I just recently found this out after I've had three children, and I had a C-section with my third, that if you have a C-section, depending on the insurance held by the hospital, your additional children may have to be delivered C-section in order for you to have your children there.
Interesting. What do you know about that, Teresa?
I guess I didn't understand the question that you have to have a C-section to have your child at the same hospital.
That's what it sounded like. Let's right. see if Jessica's still there. Do we have that right, Jessica?
In some smaller hospitals, because of the insurance that they carry, the insurance to the hospital.
Oh, okay, the malpractice insurance. Yeah. So, yes, depending on the hospital, right now there are documented to be 30% of hospitals in the United States ban vaginal birth after cesarean section attempts. So if you're at a hospital that bans that, then you would be told that you had to have a C-section. Now, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists suggests in their most recent practice bulletin on vaginal birth after cesarean section, which was in 2010, that women who desire to have a vaginal birth after a C-section and have a provider or want to deliver at a hospital that won't allow that should be referred somewhere else. Of course, we all know that's not always possible, particularly if women live a long ways from another hospital. But I think that is common.
Okay, thank you for the call, Jessica. And we move now to Andrea in La Crosse. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, yes. I was just going to say I'm a mother of three, and with each of my children, I really went out of my way to find providers that didn't use the fetal monitoring that would allow me to labor naturally. And it wasn't always easy to do, but I felt really strongly about it because I feel like interventions like the monitoring, like these C-sections, they just lead to so many other complications that's really detrimental, and people using them in these massive quantities is only hurting us.
And were
it's
you,
just, you know, the mothers and children that have this very special experience, it takes that away. in a lot of cases, I'm not saying that all C-sections, you know, do that, but when it's unnecessary, it does.
And Andrea, were you able to find hospitals and providers that would let you labor the way that you wanted to labor?
You know, I had great luck here in Wisconsin finding that. My second son was born in South Dakota, and it was very difficult to find providers there. Very difficult. We also had one in Utah, and it was easier there. But I've been impressed with the hospitals, especially in La Crosse, here where I live, and their willingness to work with me and the access to midwives. And, yeah, it's been a good experience here. I'm glad that we moved here.
All right. Thank you, Andrea. I appreciate the call. And, Teresa, you know, one thing, you know, the woman, it seems like you needed to do this was to be an advocate for the way that you wanted to labor. Another thing that you mentioned is doulas. How do you feel about doulas?
Yeah, doulas are labor assistants who help women in birth really kind of labor in the way that she would want to. And all evidence suggests that having one-on-one support, and that could be with a doula or someone else, but a lot of literature focuses on doulas, decreases a woman's chance of C-section, reduces her labor time, and is really seen as a benefit. So I'm a really big supporter of doulas.
All right, well, let's go back to the phones. Patrick is joining us now in West Bend. Hey, Patrick.
Hi, I just wanted to share my experience. My wife and I, for our first child, had intended to have a natural childbirth. And we went to natural child birth classes and all of that. But because of some health issues, you know, we wound up needing to have a medical intervention, and which eventually led to a C-section. And after all that experience, I was kind of surprised to learn that my wife would rather have just had the C-section, you know, not gone through. You know, we tried induction, and it was really a long and grueling ordeal and very scary for her at the end. And, you know, it. I think we had this kind of, I don't want to say prejudice, but just this idea that we wanted to have, you know, the most natural experience possible. We wanted to avoid a C-section. And I think in the end, we just sort of had this guilt about how it wound up that seemed kind of unnecessary. It just seems like this, in the face of, you know, real health problems and health risks that, you know, maybe the importance of a natural childbirth is, you know, not that significant.
Great, Patrick. Thank you for the call. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, sometimes it does seem as though there's pressure on women and families to have a perfectly natural birth. You know, I've heard of people lying about the way that they delivered so that they didn't have to admit that they had a C-section. Is there a middle ground here where we can be accepting of C-sections and also, you know, maybe encouraging when we can of a vaginal birth?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you, Veronica. I think that that particularly when women have had a difficult birth experience, and it sounds like from what Patrick described, it might have been difficult for his wife. He mentioned induction and some health issues. Oftentimes those women, for example, if they go on to have another birth, choose not to have another vaginal birth and say they would just rather have a C-section. And I think we have to respect that. And we have to respect that not all babies can be born safely with a C-section. You know, and that was the point why I made the point about the World Health Organization saying that countries with a C-section rate under 5% also put women's health at risk. And I do think that we should respect, you know, all different types of birth and respect that women may make different choices based on an experience or a medical condition and about what she'll tolerate best.
Well, in the last minute or so here, what would you recommend we do to lower the number of C-sections? You know, you look at hospitals and the way they run as an organization. Mm-hmm. What things can hospitals do and what things can women themselves do?
Right. I think that women can do things, you know, like your one of the callers described, I believe it was Andrea, about seeking out providers who have low intervention, low C-section rates, seeking out hospitals that have low C-section rates. And there are some resources to do that. One is cesareanrates.com. And consumer advocate Jill Arnold has collected hospital-level data for most states on C-section rates. And I think women can also take independent childbirth classes and learn about different risks and benefits of interventions and make decisions about what they would like that birth to be like. And so I think for women, it's that information. I think hospitals should really examine the protocols they're using, and that ties to the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. That's where a lot of the protocols come from. And really, you know, I think hospitals and providers have to insist on evidence-based protocols and practices. And the ACOG, there was an article that came out a few years ago that suggested that ACOG policy practice bulletins, fewer than 30% are based on good and consistent scientific evidence. And so I think that's a problem that needs to be addressed, and that's something that hospitals and providers can do. I also think at a more societal level, we just have to think about malpractice reform, maybe a no-fault system. That allows babies to receive care regardless of if there was negligence or not.
All right. Teresa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
That was Teresa Morris. She's the author of Cut It Out, The C-Section Epidemic in America.
Coming up on Central Time, we'll hear about the rise of farm-to-table school lunches in Wisconsin. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.